Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. You like that energy, Jay Bird?
Welcome, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. How are you?
I am tired. It is hot.
It is.
It's freaking. I talked to you in the car today. What did you guys have today? Like 85, 90 million?
90.
Come on.
Yeah, I hit 90 here. Vilas County, crazy. Tomorrow, too.
It's just absolutely ridiculous how hot
it is. Summer's last gasp, though. Hey, you know what I mean? It's going to be cooling quick here, so.
We'll see. It's almost shucker season.
Yeah.
Shucker.
Shucker
season.
Yeah, bring on the suckers.
Oof. Bring on the suckers. That's a whole other. Bring on the suckers. Oh, man. I wish it would cool off enough for sucker fishing because I feel like a sucker standing out in this heat. It is just like brutality. I'm sick of it. I'll be complaining about the cold here before too long.
Well, just a minute. Yeah, I mean, a minute ago you're in Canada and you know, it wasn't hot when you're up there. Yeah, so it's just like hot. Now you're going to reacclimate to the heat again, you know, for a while.
All I do. That's why in the Steve Paul special, I've got the hose, Jay. I literally just get hot.
Oh, yeah.
I just walked back out, turned the hose, and hosed myself down like it was my first day in prison. Mm-hmm. Remember Rambo? Like they're hosing him down like Brian Denny. He's got the hose on.
Steve's delousing station.
Delousing station. I, you know what? I need a delousing station in the boat.
That would be good. What I'm getting at. Yeah, that'd
be
great.
Right.
You know? Sure. Keep it clean.
Keep it clean. Don't come on my boat with dirty shoes. You know, I've had guys show up in the past. They look like they just came off the job site. I'm like, no. We'll give them the spray, buddy. This ain't the damn Rural King. This ain't Fleet Farm. You ain't getting in my boat with them dirty boots. Ain't a Trace Adkins video. Clean them shits up. Anyway, other than that, Jay, not a lot of new stuff coming out. When the fun times are rolling, we talk about the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop, but it's starting to get there. It's starting to be fall, you know, not a lot of new stuff coming out. I think the last new thing that hit the market was old Sloppy Spoon, the Booker Slopmaster Spoon, which was not new, but it's new to most people.
Correct. Yeah, kind of a reintroduction deal there. Well, we have the Kraken coming around the corner, of course. That's the big thing this fall. And the Kamikaze. That's one of the newest new things in the shop and on the scene right now. So, it's the end of the season. It is the end of the season, and most stuff has debuted towards the beginning of the season.
It is towards the end of the season if you're a coward.
If you're a wimp.
Mm-hmm. I don't have thermal underwear. I'm not going. So, that's it.
My fingers are getting cold.
My fingers are cold, Dad.
What do you do when the reel's freezing up? We'll be saying that pretty soon.
Don't be a woman. Turn it. Mm-hmm. Turn around. Bright eyes. Frickin', you got to have some tips and tricks. We'll talk about cold fishing here shortly, but
yeah.
I told Jay, I said, let's talk about what's happening as far as fall fishing, right? And of course, it's 4 million degrees most places, but believe it or not, unless the sun catches on fire more than it already is, we should cool down.
They got a forecast for a high of 56 on Thursday here.
Really?
So, I mean, it's up and down.
It'll knock it down. And, of course, in the south, it's a slower go up north. I mean, it will cool down. It always does. If not, we're in big trouble. But, if you're savvy about things, you need to start thinking about fall transition, and I don't mean the transition, because what always comes up when you talk fall fishing, especially thinking about the northern habitat zone, people start thinking turnover and all this stuff. Not there yet, but there is definitely a transitional period in what fish are doing when we start getting those cool nights, Jay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen, I mean, before this warm snap, were you seeing, didn't you say you like had some high 40s overnight or low 50s or something?
Goofy? Oh, no. We had, what is today? Today's Sunday night. It was earlier this last week. There was two nights that got down to 30s.
Really?
And water. Damn. Yeah. Yeah. Tom had frost on his car. Coming to work.
Folks, everybody.
I'm not kidding. He was he had his heavy boots on and this heavy coat and everything. We went and shot shorts that weekend on the lake. He was all bundled up like a snowman.
Tom had frost on his car.
Oh, poor Tommy. But anyway, yeah, you know, so there was kind of a little bit of mini cool down there. Water temps were coming down.
And
people were seeing some shallow activity, which is just what the doctor ordered in that scenario, early September.
That's like looking at Instagram, shallow activity.
Yeah, I guess. Right.
Here I am doing fun things with fun people. Shallow
My life
activity.
Is wonderful.
Everything is perfect. I am dead inside. I'm dead inside. I'm trying to hide that I'm dead inside. Anyway,
blah, blah, blah.
So,
wow, feeling kind of randy. Right there in the
America.
Look at America.
Labor Day. There's people that died so we could have Labor Day.
Wrong holiday, Steve. But
oh,
yeah,
my apologies.
Yes.
People died for your freedom of Labor Day. What?
So, yeah.
Anyway, fall is around the corner. It's obviously inevitable. I think the main thing you need to start thinking about is don't get hung up on summer patterns, because the one thing, and you just said fish going shallow, right, Jay?
Yeah.
It's one of these deals like late summer fishing. Obviously, mornings and evenings, you can get that shallow bite. Don't get me wrong. But we look at this deeper water, this outside edge, outside weed edges, reef bite, wherever you're at, sort of in the habitat range, as that late summer, that late July, that August thing into whenever the transition happens. Sometimes like, you know, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Tennessee, all that stuff, it's going to take until October before this happens. But you'll have this switch where all those fish that have been these deeper edges come in a little bit tighter for a minute. And I think that's what gets people, Jay. I think that's what throws people off when it comes to transitioning in the fall.
Okay.
Is there's this little period every year. It seems like the fish are hot and heavy. They're back where they were in the beginning of the summer, shallow, whatever weeds are left. They're in the shallow zone. Guess what they're hitting, Jay? Blades, and guess what else?
Topwater.
Oh, wow. Yeah, exactly. They're all over the blades in the topwater, and then poof, they magically disappear. And what happens is that shallow push and a movement out to the deeper edges in suspension. I love it when they do that shallow push. How can you not? How much cooler does it get than that? Right?
It's one of the most awaited periods of time for musky fishermen across the land,
across
every year.
The nation.
The pre-turnover, early fall, different time frame in different parts of the country, but generally where I live, September.
Yeah.
It's some of the best fishing, if not flat out the best opportunity to catch good-sized fish, because the bigger ones are going to come shallow more often, right, and they're just easier to target.
It's
obviously
one of those deals where like spring and fall seem to be money. I mean, yeah, there's that weird stuff in Minnesota where you get reed bites, you get fish up in just the skinniest of skinnies. So, notwithstanding, let's say if you're new to the podcast, you're new to musky fishing, or you've not dialed in on fall stuff, cover this for a second. So, as things cool off, it's not a dissolved oxygen issue very often unless you have very hot water. What will happen is that bait fish, those forage fish, predominantly will push back into the shallow, shallow stuff again because you're starting to get, you're getting that cool down, cold water's falling, because during the summer months, you get a warmer layer that permeates farther in the water column, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As the deeper edges, and deep's relative, I'm not saying it's like the bottom of the lake. I'm saying like deep breaks, deeper weed edges become less appealing to the bait fish. Everything's going to follow. And then at a certain point, you get a snap back, bam, where it's too cool up there and things are not happening. These fish move out. So take full advantage. I'm not knocking it. You're not knocking it. It can be awesome. I love throwing big blades. I love throwing topwater. Especially one thing I'll say is this. The further we get into the year, I focus less on prop baits and focus more on walk the dog baits. Right?
Okay.
Why that is, I don't know. It just has always worked, you know. Where August, September up in your neighborhood, I might put away the fat bee of the top raider and go with a Havana banana. Or sorry, I just said that.
A jackpot.
You know, it's like, I never say that, and it just came out of nowhere because Havana
it's
banana.
It's really not that funny.
It is to me because it's okay. Freaking cracks me up. You know, but what I'm talking about when I say Havana banana, like Chris from Minnesota, one of my buddies knows, but that's old Bobby Mesencomer bait. You got your, you're laughing now. It's not that funny, right, Jay? Freaking, not funny. Break out the Havana banana. What other walk the dogs, Jay? I just throw the Havana banana. What do you throw?
Weagle.
Maybe. That freaking psycho froggy walk the doggy. That thing actually looks good. I'm not really played a lot of time with the walking raider. It's a big bait.
Yeah, it's Booker psycho froggy.
Shake
absolutely
froggy.
I would be on big bait, big profile, big push in the water.
You want to be on donkey water for that thing most of the time. But you know, you got your post giant jackpot. Goodness, walk the dog. I'm sitting here thinking, it's like walk the dog baits. It's not as cool as it once was. Musky Safari.
Yeah, Safari's got one. Yep.
What's that called? Something snake named
moccasin.
There you go. You know, Jim at Musky Shop throws those. I've not thrown those. I've had problems with weagles. I don't get weagles to walk as well as I do as a Havana banana. I'm just gonna say it repeatedly now. I don't get it to walk as well as the jackpot. That's just my sort of probably my rod angle or my setup. If you're going to take advantage of the walk the dog bite, though, what I'll say is this, is a straight wire leader seems to be helpful for that bait for real. Like you go, well, do you do this? You do that. If I'm going to focus on that early fall period and it's going to be walk the dog and it's going to be blades, I probably will just go straight wire leader if I'm throwing blades in top water. Seems to work pretty well. It's a good combination.
Gives them a good zip. It's easier to get a good side to side zip.
Exactly. Yep. It's not going to affect your blades really at all. And I say that with the caveat being, this is the time, and I just got asked this week, when do I throw a Titan? The Titan was made for this early fall fishing. Now, it's deadly all season long, that early spring and the summer, negative neutral fish. But my thought process for this sweet, like, I think what we're covering, Jay, right now is the sweet period, right? The sweetness, if you will. Say it, Jay.
The sweetness?
The sweetness of fall. Not the bad part of fall. The sweetness.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm just rambling and making
pins crap. And needles, Steve.
Pins and needles with JSE. Jay faces his biggest fears. Sorry. But at this time of year, when I'm dialed in on the sweet part of fall, when fish have moved up shallow and it's kicking butt, straight wire leader, which allows me to really get a great action on a walk the dog bait, won't affect negatively a bucktail bite, and give me a really good snap on a Titan. So I'm going to take a Titan. I'm going to fish it with the no weight in it, or I'm going to fish say the 7 gram insert weight from the add-on pack or whatever. One of my favorite ways that I fish Titans that period is I will take both no weight and just keep the screw in it, right? So don't take the screw out, take the weight out and put the screw back in. It's got just a slow enough, it slows it down just a tick. If you need slightly slower, do the 7 grams. That period when the boat's setting in 8 to 6 feet and I'm throwing the shallow zone, there's old weeds or whatever's left there. That is so fun. So like the combination being topwater blades and diving rods. Okay. That's when things get juicy. How do you identify that? I think when we get that first pretty significant temp drop in the shallow zone, right?
Yeah.
You know,
it has to be explored. Absolutely. It would be a mistake not to around here.
Jay, I don't know what you've seen, but you know, I'm hearing there's still stuff definitely in the 7. I mean, it's all over the place right now. It's hard to gauge. And one thing I'll say is this, I'm not trying to rejoinder myself here. When we get the Q&A stuff and I get texts and emails and we're talking to everybody, it's hard to gauge. You basically have to go, how hot is it where you're at? Right? Because it's just bizarro land of the discrepancy of heat and what you're thinking seasonally. But now, you'll know it when you get those first little, you know, crisp. Jay, it's not the sweet time. It's Christmas.
Yeah.
It's crisp outside.
Yeah, a week from now, we'll be like, water dropped quite a bit.
It'll be crisp.
In temperature.
You'll feel it. You know it.
Yeah.
If you need a hoodie in the morning, that's when game's on like Donkey Kong. My game plan when this first happens, mornings seem to do really well for me. Early, I want to be there before sunrise, and I will be throwing topwater walk the dogs before sunrise, right? And I will transition to diving rise and blades. That's it. And that working that shallow zone where my cast is landing up in inches, maybe a foot or two, and working back. Mm-hmm. Application wise, that time of year, that spanky Pugsley or light bodied bucktails like the MEPS that I love so much, right? Or your Booker 500?
Like a single blade.
Single blades.
A musky Marabou or musky Flashabou, actually.
Right.
I like the Flashabous better than the Marabou.
I like it better. But the Marabou, this time of year, it's not that time of year yet because it's hotter than heck, but what we're gearing up for, it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 3 weeks, depending on where you're at. It's coming, it's happening, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's happening. It's something you're going to consider. What I like about the MEPS Flashabou is the thin blades. They have a lot of lift. It's a light body. The Pugsley obviously is a blade body with a, you know, a wooden body on a blade bait. But you said Flashabou versus Marabou. There is an argument that could be made for some of these Shumway Flashers and the musky Marabous because that Marabou has a little bit more lift in the water, right? So if you're fishing the shallow zones and you need a slower retrieve, a puffy Marabou body that holds a little bit more air when it lands and all this stuff, it could be applicable. So it's not something you want to overlook. But I think that time of year, this Christmas, Jay, when things are getting crispy in the mornings and those fish move up shallow, diving rise blades, topwater, right? For me, patterning wise, right when it happens, it's either a week or 2 weeks of just B.A. Baracus awesomeness, right? Then after that, it falls off a cliff. I think in the northern zone, it falls off a cliff because the turnover happens, right? And you get this funky stuff going on. And in other bodies of water, you get a transition. So without going down the rabbit hole, which is never ending on turnover, I would, if you're up north and you don't understand turnover, there's an article from last year. We should probably republish it on the app. It's been on that before. If you are looking for an explanation of turnover, what turnover actually is, and I'm not talking apple turnover from the Minocqua Arby's, Jay.
Or Quick Trip.
Stop salivating.
Okay.
Leg turnover. He's getting hungry. Yeah. What? You can, dude, if somebody goes, he's getting hungry, you got to come back with the counter, right? He's getting hungry. I mean, it's Temple the dog here, Jack. Ooh. Anyway, what? Yeah. You know, freaking talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. If you're looking for the best explanation of turnover that I've seen, go to the Muskie Shop blog, muskieshop.com. You all know that. Scroll back here, and there's an article on turnover. I will tell you when. I'm looking back here. Let's go back a little bit. Back here. There's some wonderful fish recipes and all this stuff. Babe Winkleman level. Remember Babe Winkleman's wife had a fish recipe every week?
Yes, I remember that show. Yeah.
You know. My wife posts fish recipes on the website. What are you going to do? Anyway, scroll back far enough. I'll put it on the app. It would be 5 pages back, I think. Let's see.
Okay.
Sorry. Bear with me. It's worth looking. This is some autumn-y stuff. Whatever. It's back from last year. I'll put it on the app this week on the 101 section if you're looking. That explains turnover, the science of turnover, not how to play turnover, not to what to do in turnover. But everybody goes, what's turnover? You hear it consistently. What's turnover? What's turnover? This explains exactly the science behind it.
Yeah, so, it's a very important factor to consider, but also consider that it doesn't occur everywhere, and it doesn't occur in areas like up north here. You're probably seeing, I mean, you don't have lakes that turn over, I assume, right?
We have current and depth, so no.
You know, smaller lakes aren't going to turn over because the lake has to, technically, it's got to have a thermocline. Mm-hmm. To qualify. So in shallow lakes, you know, people are like, ah, that lake already turned over. It's turning over right now. It's like, yeah, that's just weeds dying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 10-foot lake, you know, deep lake is not going to turn over. So, right. But the deeper ones do, and it's, yeah, check out that article. It's a very interesting thing to apply to your musky fishing in the fall, you know, in October when that stuff starts to happen.
Well, and so something to consider of you know, there's not like a lake report up in your neck of the woods or Minnesota where it's like, oh, the lake's turning over. You know, you just don't know.
No, there is no definitive conclusive evidence of that. And it's kind of comical actually over the years hearing all the different theories, you know, and you know, you hear some reports from outside of town that, you know, it's like, oh, lakes are turning over. You know, you hear this in August and stuff. It's like, no. Sorry. Mm-mm.
No. It, when it happens, it happens. They don't all happen at the same time. And I think what is the case more often than not is people go out and they're targeting X lake, X, Y, and Z, whatever. And they don't even know it's turning over. They just can't catch fish.
It's not exactly easy to make that determination that if it's actually happening. You've got to have a lot of different criteria.
You would have needed to be there the week before, you know, have some basis. So
exactly, you know, so, something to draw on. But right. you know some lakes aren't going to show it, like some are going to be so obvious. It's just like there's literally, it's like it gets brown and there's leaves floating and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, no,
it's
and just like what,
holy cow, yeah, I think it's happening right now, let's go to the other lake.
Where did that, everything off the bottom came up. Whoa, there's the corpse of that dude.
But you have to have wind and you have to have cooperative, you know, weather for a week to make that thing and get it to quote unquote flip quick. Mm-hmm. You know, and that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's drawn out and it it's different every year for different lakes.
So if you're looking at a body of water, you've targeting a body of water where turnover happens, educate yourself immensely on what the signs of turnover are. There you go, you know. But taking that out of the question, I said we're not going down the rabbit hole of turnover. We sort of did. But back to, you know, we're talking about crisp Miss.
Hoodie weather.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. You can target these fish, that shallow bite, and all this fun stuff. Like I said, blades, topwater, dive and rise. After that, when everybody seems to lose the thread, I think that's when most boats are done, Jay. Right? You get this really, you know, badass little time of the year. After that, it's the few and the far betweener guys that are getting serious. What I recommend doing, the first thought process of once that hot bite starts dying off, we pray that we've stayed ahead of it and we've identified the signs. Well, how do we know what's happening, how that fall bite is falling off? We start seeing forage moving deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if we've done our launch, we launched the boat and we're paying attention to not just the weather patterns and the seasonality, but the forage movements, we can sort of stay ahead of this thing. Because I think where people lose the thread is the hot fall bite. It falls apart. And then everybody goes, I don't know where they went. And they go out the next time they beat their head against the wall, et cetera, et cetera. So don't take it for granted. Don't go out, so you got your fish in the weekends or whatever you'd be targeting fish on. Don't go out and just beat your head against the wall going, I know they're shallow because last week we moved six and got one and it was good, right? Make an assessment of what's going on, because wasting one day or 2 days of a pretty good time of year on a shallow bite that's truly non-existent, you're missing what I think is more exciting than even this shallow water bite with blades, topwater, and diving rods, which is the big fish on the outside breaks before they make a winter transition, right? And I think that's the most overlooked bite. I think that's probably the best access to true giant fish. And you go, what are we looking at, how we approach that, right? So as this shallow transition happens, all these fish push up shallow. And again, to reference turnover, you have your pre-turnover bite, your post-turnover bite. I will say this is what happens during turnover with muskies, if you're wondering. They go everywhere. It's just berserk. There's usually no pattern during a turnover. They're just random. But let's say we're not dealing with that. We're just dealing with a lake that doesn't turn over, whatever it might be. Once that shallow bite, that cool off in the shallows pushes bait too far and they come out to that edge, that's when I start thinking early trawl falling. Oh, my goodness, can you talk? Early fall trolling and big rubber bites, which is just absolutely mind-bogglingly good, right? So make that transition and be prepared to make the transition from this shallow water, blade, topwater, diving rise deal to the trolling bite, even on some of your lakes up there, Jay, where it's like it's smaller bodies of water, but you can do a lot of damage even trolling one line. Let's say you're on a 200-acre, 300-acre lake. If you got Unibuddy and you control two, and to me, it's like that right back to where we were before they moved back up shallow, right? People will get all freaked out. They're like, once the shallow water bite ends in the spring or early summer, right, people get their butts kicked most of the time until this fall thing comes back. Well, savvy anglers are targeting muskies on the first main break on the outside edge of stuff. And once this hot fall bite's over with, guess where they're back to, Jay? Right where they were during late summer. And those fish are more active and they're ready to go. So implementing trolling passes, implementing like supernatural big baits, Livingston pounders, depth raiders, whatever it is, whatever you're trolling, you can really pick up some fish. Because what's cool is a lot of this weed is dying. It's a little bit more structured trolling. It's a little more targeting there. Again, I think some of the most applicable baits when we're talking that is these deeper edges, which is going to be your Kraken, your tubes, and your big rubber.
Yeah.
On some of these lakes, it's just devastating.
Yeah.
Because these fish are like, they're not negative and neutral down there. They're ready to go.
Right. You have a high percentage of ready to go fish in a specific zone that's easily obtainable. You know, it's just like 12 feet. Are you kidding me? That's awesome.
Right. Which is, you got, you know, if you're a caster and you just refuse to troll, we should have a talk. But, but, you know, I think a lot of times once we get past that hot bite, most guys are just fishing out the wrong side of the boat.
Yeah, right.
Throw the other way. That's where they're at. They're behind you. Where are they at? They are not where you want them to be. So staying ahead of that pattern by watching your forage base and sort of paying attention to what's going on there is going to be pretty impactful. You know, don't take, like I said, don't take the pattern for granted. Stay on top of it. But be willing to go for that tube bite, that crank bite trolling, or the crankbait trolling bite, which is probably my favorite of the year because, you know, depending on where you're at, line restriction-wise or whatever, dude, you come through with six freaking headlocks, you're ready to rock and roll, right? Or you come through with two jakes, two headlocks, and two depth raiders, you're just like a freaking sane coming through the water. And those fish are looking to feed because they know winter is coming, right? Things are happening. Mm-hmm. Where there's more biological pressure on them this time of year because they're feeling the temp drop. The days are shorter. That photo period is getting shorter. They know better, right?
They're putting the feed bag on, Steve.
They're getting close to the feed bag. I think the feed bag is pre-ice up, right?
Jeez. It's pre-feed bag.
It's the pre-feed bag. Sorry. I just had to be contrary, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, putting on the old feed bag. But nonetheless, I'm sorry. There's so many feed bag, whatever. I'm not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of feed bag stuff out there. Yeah. But, sounds like a song. Song title.
Feed bag jokes. Gonna leave them alone. But focus on the first break. So if we're doing structural homework, out from the littoral zone, what's the first major break? What's the second major break? And where do we get to the contact point to the main basin? And have your sights set on that and have a game plan. So a trolling game plan and a casting game plan for that time of year, once we're past that awesome Christmas bite, depending on the forage size of your waterway, if it's shad or whatever it is, have some deeper running crankbaits and some rubber presentations rigged up and ready to go. Because what will happen one day, you'll come off that awesome shallow bite, and it's time for this. And if you are ahead of the game on this, is just explosive. And I've often, like when this shallow stuff happens, Jay, that everybody's excited about for the fall, right? Just being me and being a naysayer, I will still target that first major break and the second break trolling even during the hot part of the fall, if you will, because a lot of those big fish will not make that move all the way in. You'll see them. You'll see big fish up there, but I always have felt that the big fish will just hang back a little bit more that time of year, right? Like, I'm not going all the way in, right? I've been deep. I'm comfortable. Going to move in where the bigger forage is and stay on that outside break. So a combination, if you're really targeting hogs or you're on big fish water, you know, a shallow and a mid-depth game plan is going to be important. You know, or if you want action, stay shallow, but be prepared for that mid-depth bite. You know, and again, I think the biggest thing you got to realize, I guess what I'm getting at in this whole thing with the how to make a differentiation between that shallow bite or that break bite, is know when the party's over. In the words of Billy Eilish, Jay.
Yep.
Sorry. Anyway, people are like, man, these guys are retarded.
really?
Really. I think so. I hope so. I'll only hook you if you let me. Sorry. So, nonetheless, you got to know when the party's over shallow to stay ahead of this bite. The same thing could be said for the winter bite, but primarily the fall to winter transition is far less like complicated. They just move out a little bit more, Jay. You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, I'm at 12 feet. I'm going to go to 14 for the winter. There it is.
And then they can suspend deep.
Right. Another thing that I would recommend if you're on a reservoir or a lake, seems like bigger fish will suspend more so once we get past the you know, and I say the hot part of the fall bite. I mean, it's a hot bite, not the warm part of fall, but it kind of is. Those bigger fish will suspend off the edge and on the break line, but just in open water, if you will, right? So they're sort of triangulated. They're coming out. They're suspended over 14 feet. And I have found times where if I just target high in the water column, but over a certain depth range, right? You see what I'm getting at?
Sure.
In the evening, instead of coming up and going into the shallows, they'll just move vertically. And I think winter, more so than anything, fish start thinking vertically instead of moving in and out. They make a vertical movement. Again, how many times have you read about, you know, and I'm talking big fish. I'm not talking 45s here. I'm talking Donkey Kong.
Okay.
That's French, Jay. Donkey Kong. So these big fish.
Are you sure?
Look it up.
I will.
Do you not have Wikipedia?
Looking it up right now.
Thank you. That gave me a drink break there. But when you get into the winter, we talk about these vertical movements, right? Steep ledges, edges, vertical drops. Well, the big fish are already like, meh, I'm lazy. I'll tag a walleye out here, move vertical, up and down, right? So if you're on a hog hunt, you're looking for Donkey Kong, be looking for those suspended fish in open water over those deeper breaks. So let's say your lake is 20 feet, 25 feet max. You know, I'm looking for that 12, 14 foot zone if you got it. You know, it might be 10 to 13 or 10 to whatever or whatever you got, right? That mid-depth zone for really big fish coming up majors, coming up mornings, and coming up evenings and suspending there.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do some nasty stuff there. The other thing I'd throw out is this is, and it'll be in that video. We're doing a kind of a long form video about some tips and tricks from the muskie shop. But the fall, Jim loves to rip troll in the winter, right before ISO. Yeah. But rip troll and dive and rise baits in the early mid fall is pretty nasty on open water fish. Now I wouldn't say just go out there and rip troll if you can only one man per, right? Or one rod per man. But if you control multiple rods, I love having somebody rip troll a Titan or whatever you got, rip troll the crap out of that thing, a shallow running bait. And it can be pretty dynamic that time of year. It seems like, you know, those fish are ready to feed up. They're ready to feed in the shallow zone. But again, what I'm getting at, I'm trying to knock in your noggin, knock, is that these fish might not make that move inward. They're going to start that vertical crap, which they're going to do, Jay, for half the year, right? They're going to make a movement up and down. Now, argument can be made when the ice is under that they'll use the ice to herd fish in the shallow zones. But if you have open water, typically they're making vertical movements. So that's going to be something to consider there. The other thing is this, is I think once you get significant temp drops too, I think live bait's on the menu. When do you guys really start seeing live bait move at the drop, Jay?
Water temp wise?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, low 60s?
Yeah.
That's when it really starts to kick in. And then, of course, you know, as the lakes start to hopefully gradually go downward from that over, you know, a couple of week period, well, you know, when it gets down to, well, I mean, you know, in the 50s, it's cold, and that's usually somewhere in the mid 50s when you start to see the lakes turning over and suckers are really effective. They stay lively in the colder. That's the thing. you know, they're effective. You can catch them on, I mean, just ask one of the interview, one of the Smitties. I mean, they can catch fish on suckers all season long. It's just hard to keep them lively and hard to keep them alive when the water and the air temperature is warm. So it can be extremely effective when the water's in the 50s and below.
Right. So even when we get in the 60 zone, it's a viable option.
Sure.
You know, so depending on where you're fishing, considering that. Now, you know, I've never had a problem with live suckers. I don't care what you use, just put it on quick strike. You know, a catch is a catch, and it's so such a traditional thing for me. I mean, it's just, you know, you rip a bulldog and you got a sucker at your feet. It feels natural when it's cold. But it's something to consider once we get in that later fall period or this mid-transitional zone to keep fish interested. You know, we got a sucker video coming out here where I sort of talk about some different tips and tricks and what to do with them, what not to do, whatever. But it's something you could consider during that early fall transition. But don't get, I think, Jay, I mean, I can't remember when I can't remember personally running a sucker when the water was in the 60s ever myself, but it's viable, right? You just need to be conscientious of taking care of them and all this stuff. Cause I know people are up. Yeah. It's the funny thing is this up north. I'll just tell, it'll be like July 4th. People like, you guys got suckers, you know, like,
yeah.
You're like, right. Yeah, that, you know, that thing's going to die the second you put in like 75 degree water, right? You know that, right? Are you taking this thing home as a pet, or, you know, are you taking it to give your wife a pedicure with it? Or, if you're going to fish it, you know, it's going to die, right? Immediately. But, you know, water temp plays an issue or a concern there, but obviously the 50s, forget about it. But, you know, if it's 63, 64, I think it's a viable thing that you can consider. I think one thing I'm not trying to make it a sucker thing, but we'll cover that later, but would be suckers are going to inhibit your boat control, right? So I feel that if I mean to make a quick change or all this stuff, I feel like I got a sucker and I got really kind of mamby-pamby through spots, right?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, there's some of that for sure, yeah.
So
I call it sucker maintenance.
Sucker maintenance.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were married.
No, I think he's in the weeds, so I'll bring him in and check him.
All right. Oh, Larry's in the weeds.
Larry's in the weeds again.
You know, every time I have a sucker out, Jay, I call him Larry, by the way. I don't know why. Always have.
Doesn't matter the gender?
I don't gender them, Jay. My suckers are gender neutral.
Gender-free zone. Gotcha.
They are gender. Most of them, I just take them in Bud Light, gender fluid. I just you know, they're just wide open. I don't judge. Judgment-free zone. It's like Planet Fitness. That's where my gym membership is, Jay. It's a judgment-free zone.
Wow.
Yeah. It's what it says on the wall when I go to use the Stairmaster so I don't get fat.
The Stairmaster. Yeah, right. Good one.
I've used it.
Yeah, I mean, right, sure.
I have a Stairmaster. They got a stair machine. Sometimes I go over there in the middle of the night and run on the treadmill. What's wrong with that?
Sure.
You know?
Got to keep fit, baby.
Freaking, you know, I got the body of a musky guide. Anyway, no, I don't gender my suckers. But again, I think it's a little ahead of time. If you get that cold snap, consider it in some capacity. What I'm more interested in, when we get past that awesome crispus bite, and we're thinking about the trolling bite, is really understanding structure. We've been there, done that. If you've not listened to it, listen to the Structure Master classes, please, twice. Most people have, and some people got some stuff from it, and we appreciate that. But understanding structure, as shoreline cover deteriorates, a la your weeds are dying, things change drastically. Question we get every year, we've probably answered it every year for 5 years. Do dying weeds deter muskies? right? There's a question of oxygenation. There's a question of this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
At a certain point, muskies are going to get out of there, right? Why? Probably because the bait fish got out.
Probably.
Probably. Right.
But cover still cover.
Cover still cover until there's no forage there. Right. So how do I know when weeds are worthless? Well, if the outside break or the suspended fish are outside of the weeds and there's a ton of bait outside of them, but there's none in them, it's pretty good thought. Right. Or if like, you know, here's historically productive weed bed and now the channel next to it is hitting or whatever you're looking at. Right. Use your brain. If the bait's not there, the fish are probably not there, meaning muskies, right? So let's look at that. That can happen any time of year, right? And I'm not saying the death of weeds. I'm just saying forage fish make movements. But if you're continually seeing that forage is not in the weeds, I will probably start focusing less on weeds. Eh? Makes sense? Yeah. So don't focus on are the weeds dying. Focus is the forage present. Let the forage dictate whether muskies will use it or not. Now, that's going to take a keen eye on your electronics moving in and out of these zones. Don't just drive your boat in and go, oh, here's the weed bed. I saw two panfish. They're here. Do a scan on the way in. And when I say about structure, look at the structure elements leading in and out of these weed beds. There's something, right? Whether it be a slough, whether it be just a straight up littoral zone, there's some kind of structural element on the outside of this, right? Unless you're in a lake that is consistently 5 feet deep from side to side, there's a change. Look on the change. Look at the depth changes. Is the forage there? Then scan the weed beds. Pay attention to that. Let that sort of dictate whether we're targeting these zones or not. Because I think a lot of times where people miss the or lose the thread on when they should make that transition is going to be they've got to go 2-3 trips and not see a fish, right? Meaning a muskie, when they could have avoided all that pain and suffering by locating bait fish moving in and out of this and targeted that zone earlier, right? Have that game plan in place because Jay, and I'm just riffing off the top of my head, things I've seen happen over the years, right? It's funny, yeah. We started, we're complaining about how hot it is, right? You've lived many moons. You've seen it before where you have a hot summer and then like the middle of September it's snowing, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
literally.
It could happen. Yeah, for sure. Know?
The blizzard is 69.
Let me ask you this about back to weeds. It's like you obviously live and fish most of the time in one of the warm weather climates of the country. Mm-hmm. What percentage of the weeds die off in the winter?
I will say this. Interesting factoid. The summer heat killed them this year.
That's right. We were talking about that earlier. But on a normal year, I'm getting at, obviously. But yeah, you had.
Oh, this year looked like somebody came through with a weed eater and just trimmed them all down to 3 feet.
Bizarre.
Because just dying off already. I have seen. I don't want to say lush and plentiful. But I've seen green weeds December, January.
Yeah, and I assume so.
And you could find clumps, and I'm saying fishable clumps or this, that, and the other. But it just varies. I don't think there's a really solid baseline. I've seen winters where there's none. I've seen winters where you go, man, are these ever going to die? Literally, where it's like, okay, this is... Huh. It's January, and you're like, man, these are green and healthy, and you go, it's a mild winter.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I mean, you know, you live in a place that never sees ice on the water, so it's different from what I'm used to.
Yeah, so you just keep an eye on it, and you go, I mean, once the weeds start getting scungy, that brown stuff, or real just, like, clumpy, you know, it's problematic. There's a lot of years, though, too, where I'm talking, and this is something that holds water, if you will. Something that cues me in that I really need to make a change in my game plan is you'll come out one day and there's weeds floating everywhere. right? Crap everywhere. It's not a turnover thing. Just weed tops, broken crap everywhere. Things start coming off the bottom, whether it be a storm or current or something sort of mixes the water up. You know, I'm not dealing with turnover here, but I'm dealing with like flotilla. It's like, ugh. You know, that's a pretty good cue for what's happening. So, but as far as my weed, yeah, heck, you know, it can be. I've seen it where it's like just never died. You know, you're like, okay, well, they're just a weed bed. So, but I think most places you're going to have, I mean, if Jay in the winter up there, you have weed beds under the ice.
It's true. Some.
So it
depends. Some hold on some. For some reason. I don't know how. Right.
They're survivors. Dun, 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 dun. But, you know, it's just year to year. This year's been, like I said, I actually called Jay, last week, sort of when I was getting back in the swing of things from Canada. I was like, dude, you're never going to believe this. You know, weed beds that are like acres of weeds just gone from the heat. You know, it just got so hot in a lot of places. And I'm not saying I'm targeting these zones. I might have went out and drove around in my boat trying to get a looking ahead, because I plan ahead as far in advance. You know, hey, what weed beds are still viable? What is this? What is that? What is this?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just shocking. You know, vegetation like that, it's a year-to-year endeavor. It's like my front yard, Jay. Looks like it's Texas. It's burnt to crap. You know?
But you got a nice pond.
I got a hell of a pond.
Poor pond. Pond be good for you.
What did you say?
Poor pond. Pond be good for you. It's Caddyshack.
I know. My pond's amazing, though. It's freaking... Jody put out some things she called fairy lights.
Did she?
Yeah, I don't know. They look nice. I don't know if they're fairy lights. But
I'll look that one up later, too.
Don't, Jay. Don't do it, Jay. Don't do it. Don't Google fairy lights.
Donkey Kong. According to the indispensable Urban Dictionary, rapper Ice Cube first popularized the phrase in 1992 with the song Now I Gotta Wetcha.
What?
I don't know that. Yeah. Since then, things have been on like Donkey Kong.
Well, that's completely wrong. As someone that used to this is what you do before you're married. You collect arcade machines, right? And then you get married and you can't do that anymore. I owned Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. And it was not Ice Cube, buddy. But anyway, long story short, back to the Muskies. I don't even know what I was saying. Just don't be a dum-dum. That could be the whole podcast every week. Don't you think? Don't be a dum-dum. Think ahead.
It's got possibilities.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
We've talked about how to prepare for the hot, shallow bite, what to do when that's not there and moving out there. Talking lakes and reservoirs. What do you think on rivers? Because you're a river rat. Jay has a personalized tag on his. Jay drives a 1998 Chevy. I can't remember.
Not true.
What?
Rivers in the fall? Oh, much of the same. I mean, you know.
I was going to say your plate said river rat on your.
Oh, my license plate?
Yeah, it's on your 1998. What were the. God, everybody had one. I can't remember.
The vanity plates, yeah.
River rat.
But it's not spelled completely out. It's got abbreviations on it. Right. It's just like, what is people look at it and they go, ringing
river rat. What? On your 88s olds?
that's a good one.
88 olds with a customized plate that says river rat on it. He pulls his boat with it. You probably could pull a boat with an 88 olds.
Yeah, with a trailer ball back there. Yeah, dude, good looking vehicle.
Absolutely. I will say this, and I'm just rambling, and I apologize.
You are.
Oh, shut up. What was it, like the Cutlass? I remember having a friend that had a Cutlass. It was like...
a Cutlass.
V8, like the old one, like 70s. Things, nothing but steel and like 47 feet long.
AMC Pacer, man.
Oh, goodness. Moving on. Sorry. What's
Think
going
about
on?
That thing.
What's going on? What's going on rivers in the fall, Jay? Remember the movie you start in called Rivers in the Fall? Don't Google that either, people.
That sounds like a combination of Rivers Run Through It and Legends of the Fall. Well, it is. Anyway.
It's basically Jay just pretends
it's Steve's combo.
Jay pretends he's Brad Pitt at a Golden Corral. Anyway, continue.
Well, river fishing. I mean, shallow weeds, flats.
Right.
Current nearby. They move up and you got a seam of current next to it, and it is the best time of the year for topwaters. Period. You're going to get mistake fish too, because it's just like everything's up there when they're active, and you know, big smallies and muskies, and yeah, it's the best time for topwater and blades.
There you go. We know that.
So yeah, I mean, most rivers are going to have that kind of you know, structural element where there's going to be you know, that perfect depth, and hopefully you've got a river system unlike what I've been dealing with this summer, which is now so low you can't even get a boat on it. It's 10 feet down, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah, actually over 10 feet down, and it's still going down. You
know,
so
I wonder that I don't know about everybody, but it seems like low water is a concern. I mean, Canada, you guys, it's low where I'm at.
The lakes seem fine around here. I haven't seen or heard anybody complaining about, you know, it's just like my pier is dry, you know, type thing, which has happened here in the last drought a decade ago or something like that. There was some serious water droppage on the natural lakes around here, but they're fine for the most part. It's just some of these reservoirs like the Willow flowage and the Rainbow flowage and stuff like that, they've been letting out water. Mm-hmm. Big time, you know, basically since July, since it started to get dry across the state and across the region. So it's just what happened.
Obviously, that when things get crisp, musky fishing's kicking butt. When you're targeting the river, Jay, and let's say that bite dies off, what's Jay's game plan for? And I mean, you're on a pretty good stretch of river. I mean, it's not dissimilar from a lot of East Coast stuff. You know, it's kind of transcended is what I'm getting at. Once that top water, that blade bite dies off, what's the game plan? Is it trolling or is it rubber? What's going on?
Again, if you're on a normal river system that's got some diversity and good depth to it and stuff like that, live bait fishing can be extremely effective. Off the deeper edges, off these flats, and
if you're off the deeper flats, is it like cast up there and have him hanging off, or elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't sucker fish a lot, and if I did, that would be the game plan, is to have someone in the boat so you got your sucker maintenance taken care of, and both guys casting at the same time. And the river, you know, it should be fairly easy to navigate that way, because if you've got any current at all, you can determine, okay, we're going to move up and stay on this edge. You know, if you know your water good, and it's just like stay in 9 feet of water type thing, cast up to the shallows and bring it, you know, bring it towards that break and run that sucker at a consistent depth. You know, the rivers are darker and less light penetration, so the presentation doesn't have to be as deep, apart from if you're on, you know, what's that river in the Niagara and all that, and St. Lawrence and stuff like that, where I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like
typical rivers, 25-30
rivers
feet
in
deep.
Wisconsin, right? Yeah, where it's 25,
anywhere
30
the
max.
Fox, you know, or name, you know, the Licking,
yeah, these
in
big
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're not talking Ohio River. We're talking, you know, the Sandy, the Licking, you know, all the rivers.
Yeah, the guys in Pennsylvania that basically are river fishing. And it's just like that's what they're doing. And they've got shallow water, and hopefully they got consistent water levels, which is key if it's dropping. You know, we talked about that, I think, last week. It's like,
Jay, now you're
dropping bad.
Yeah, dropping on a river is bad. Now, Jay's number one sucker tip is always point your boat and drag your sucker upstream all day. Right, Jay?
No, that's not funny. It's true. It's just like they don't like to be manhandled with speed. So,
and that's I'm say that just to be silly. If you're gonna live bait fish, I'm not trying to talk. We keep coming back to suckers, but it's such an intrinsic thing of the fall, and we move in. When I said that later period, if you are live bait fishing in any capacity, drift down. I know that sounds, some of you guys are like, I can't believe he hate me. Listen, we're all at different points in our muskie game. If you're going to drift down the river with it, I've seen people fighting upstream before, Jay, with them.
Yeah, if there's current and you're going upstream, yeah, that would be, what happens to the sucker is the liveliness goes right out the window.
Yeah, he spins like a bucktail.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
It's not a great presentation. It can be fun if you're just looking to kill things. I want to buy this for $12 and kill it. But I, you know, and I fished some moving water, and that shallow, that obviously the your inside turns, your outside turns, blah 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 blah, all your typical stuff. Because the cool thing with rivers is there's less movement of the fish in general. They like the same zones pretty much year round, right? Lakes offer too much comfort, so you're not going to have to make some diametric shift on a river system per se, but you need to be positioning your boat in such a manner that you're targeting that deeper edge. I think a lot of times all you have to do if you're fishing a river system is cast further, right? So some of these things, 3-4 casts wide. I mean, a big river, Jay, is like, what, a quarter mile wide? Man, that's big.
Well, that's, yeah, they're out there for sure. Yeah,
but,
I mean,
but you know, if you can bomb cast in where you're covering right up at the edge and hitting the sort of the break line, because a lot of your river systems, you have a shallow edge, you have a main break, you have your main contact point in the river bottom, or your, which is the equivalent of your main basin, the sort of the true bottom, right? Just back things off, right? Run deeper running baits. I do like, you know, really implementing tubes on rivers the later we get into the fall, because I can work it shallow and then work it mid and work it deep and sort of contour the bank, if you will. The Kraken as well, and Bulldogs. I've used a lot of different rubber over the years just for that, where I want to contour. Once we get to that point where muskies are holding deep, which that's a whole other podcast once we get into that I don't want to say cold water period, but you can really get a lot of mileage out of rubber on rivers to maximize that. What else? I mean, your mid-running crankbaits, I think, on river systems or moving water, your jointed depth rater, your Livingston Lures Pounder, you know, baby depth raters. What else, Jay? That slammer fat. What's the slammer one? The slammer deep, but it really doesn't run that deep. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they've got, not jointed, but they've got several straight models, well, so saying, 6, 7, and some 10s.
I'm
yeah.
saying the deeper running ones. I'm talking other like mid-depth kind of deals there that sort of pop into mind as far as crank presentations there.
The 7-inch deep would do a fantastic job, as would some of the Big Fork stuff.
Well, don't forget that. I do like the Avatar. Yeah. I mean,
it's a cool bait.
It's a cool bait. One thing I'll say about the Avatar, and I love what everything Tom LeBeau makes. He makes beautiful baits. That is a wood bait. So if you're fishing nasty stuff, the Slammer might be more advantageous, however. Because the Avatar can, I mean, if you're fishing rocky stuff or wood, you can jank one of them up pretty fast. Where the Slammer, for that mid-depth application, I'm not knocking the Slammer. I think the Avatar has a fatter, like, sort of more enticing action. But I think the durability of the Slammer is worth it in that application. If you're fishing nasty stuff. If you're not fishing rocks and wood, I'll go Avatar. What else really comes to mind? I do like weighted Suix and Titans in moving water, though. Weighted dive and rise, and just rip it down, let it come up, rip it down, let it come up, if we're targeting that mid depth. But I would say, like, you nailed it though. So you're gonna have that hot bite in the shallows, that top water bite like Jay's talking about. Everybody's just vacillating, waiting for this, right, Jay? Everybody's like,
yeah.
If you know, I mean, if you're a musky angler in the know, you're going, I can't wait for this, it's gonna be awesome. Stay ahead of the curve, whether it be rivers or lakes or reservoirs. I would say that key again is watching the forage. Let the forage tell you when that pattern has changed. Along the same lines, though, when I was talking about, I like to sort of stay ahead of the pattern from the shallow bite and concentrate on some of that mid depth, that first break stuff to target bigger fish. I think that bodes true for rivers. I think that bodes true year round, but I don't think there's a bad thought, or it's a bad thought process when that shallow bite is happening at that hot shallow bite on a river is throwing rubber parallel, right, for bigger fish. So I still think your bigger river fish might hold a smidge deeper, where if you're moving 40s, 45s, whatever, topwater and blades casting in, I think you can do some damage throwing big rubber straight ahead or behind the boat. What's your thoughts on that, Jay?
Yeah, you're talking about picking a depth, you know, like, okay, guy on the right here is throwing up to the shallows, and right, he's up in 2 and 3 feet, and there's some weeds and rocks or whatever.
Old stuff, kinda, whatever, know, yeah.
Something to work with there, and the boat's in, what, 6?
Yeah, whatever.
So then you're, 6 or 7, something like that, and you run some parallel runs on plastics like tubes and bring that thing in quickly.
Yeah.
Do some ripping.
Parallel it, you know, fan cast it maybe out to the deeper stuff, but you know, depending on, and in my head, I think when I say river and you say river, or we say a river to someone, you sort of have this thought process in your mind of the depth and the width of the river. But being able to really make sure that I'm targeting that transitional zone where things start breaking deep, again, deep is a relative term. Having a rubber bait, even when it's a hot shallow bite, I've done it so many times guiding Jay, right? I mean, if I got 3 guys in the boat, we do not need another blade or top water going, right? Mm-hmm. Who cares? I'm doing something different. Where whether I'm in the front, whether I'm in the back, doesn't matter. Blasting a mag dog and just holding on for dear life. And, you know, I've had days where, you know, we've had 2 trophy class fish come from blades or topwater, and you know, here I'm handing off the rod on a 48 or a 50 or something really good that came parallel on moving water.
Well, I mean, you know, big plastics like Medusas and bulldogs, I mean, most people are thinking, you know, like we always talk about, it's like that's a tool you use for the mid-depth presentation off mm-hmm. of, you know, off of structure, and you're, you know, you're bringing that thing in, you know, over 12 and 10 feet and stuff like that.
Right.
Because they attain depth quickly. It's like, it depends on how you fish them. I mean, okay, remember when you're up over the summer, we had a bite one day where it's just like we had to fish shallow and it was ripping rubber. We were ripping tubes.
Mm-hmm.
In very shallow water, through weeds.
That's what they
snapping
wanted.
Snapping them through there and keeping that thing as high as possible, and that required
a lot of work.
That was a lot of work. That was kind of a painful day, but
aren't they like, all though?
I got one or two. I got that one on that figure eight that you one did. Day. That was cool.
Yep.
It wasn't a monster, but hey, muskie's, you
know,
a muskie.
You know, you get up there and you're just like, that's what they want. They let them tell you what they want, and I think
that's what they want. That's where they were.
Yeah, and you know, application wise, you just find the right presentation. You know, I would say on the river tip of things, because we got a lot of these Pennsylvania guys and all these different guys. Again, your diving rods, your topwater blades, absolutely tubes, and bulldogs and Medusa. And sometimes I had a conversation this week on the boat, Jay, where guys like, you know, where I fish, they want Medusas. Period. You know. Well, some places they want bulldogs. If you don't know, figure it out by doing both and looking for a preference, right? You know, I've talked about it, whether it's a hang time thing or a profile thing. You know, being able to sort of suss that out if you don't know. Maybe you know already, but or phone a friend if you don't know, if somebody will tell you. But having some big rubber ready on a river system that time. You know, we talked about on the lakes where when that lake, that transition happens, man, if you're not considering trolling, if you're like, I hate trolling, cause whatever. I don't, whatever. God, I hate that. Like, I like catching muskies, Jay, right? You know?
Yeah, trolling's not the lazy way out.
No, I mean, it's like, not if you're doing it with me. That's freaking a circus. Trolling is more pain in the butt for me than it is casting.
Put that thing out, Jake. 28 feet. No, from the leader. 28.
Oh, yeah. Well, that or...
Bingo. Got it.
Doing four.
Check that one. It's got a weed tip on it. Yep. Oh, yeah. It's nonstop.
It's nonstop or, you know...
And it's precision.
When you're not in the boat and I've got clients and it's not somebody that I don't want to say trust, but somebody that I'm like, okay... Jay knows how to work a left-handed Akuma convector, right?
I can do it.
Right. You know, I'm setting 4 to 6 lines or whatever it might be by myself. It's like spinning plates on the Ed Sullivan Show. You know, you're just keeping everything going while you're still trying to hold the contours and you're trying to zigzag and hold a relative speed and do triggering moves. So,
and, you know, continuing an amazing conversation all at the same time.
While eating.
Good point.
While eating most of the time. If I'm sitting, I'm eating, folks. It's put that on my tombstone. But, you know, it's there's a lot going on there. I'm not trying to. I told Jay, it's like, guys. I'm not trying to talk about Titans or the Kraken or next level musky fish or anything, but if you're wanting to get into trolling and you want to get serious about it, you know, borrow the book from a friend. So, they have them at the musky shop, I will say that, but borrow it from a friend. Jay has scanned it all and will text it to you, I'm teasing. But, you know, I sort of talk about some of the details of that where, and again... Backing it up, we sort of went down this a little bit. Fall fishing past the hot part is structure fishing. Why do people stop catching fish? Because they don't understand structure. If you don't understand structure, listen to the podcast masterclasses on it, read the freaking book, and understand structure. If you understand structure, you will understand the dichotomy, which is efficiency. Is it more efficient to cast or is it more efficient to troll? Then it'll all click in your head, right? Now, something we never hardly ever talk about, trolling rivers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I'm on your river, Jay, right? Whatever. What is it, the Wisconsin River? What are you on? Nobody knows.
Yeah, Wisconsin River. Yeah.
Right? It's full of mice. Just like Jay's house. Full of mice. Jay is actually not a real human. He is just a rubber doll full of mice, Jay. Is that true? Are you just controlled internally by rats?
I don't care for those things, Steve. You know that.
I know. Anyway, long story short, depending on rate and flow, in the staging of these fish, you can actually troll rivers, and you've done it, Jay. I know you've called me before and tagged muskies. What do you do when you're trolling the river? Upstream, downstream, side to side, what's the thought process?
Well, I know where I'm going, number one. I know where all the wood is, number two.
Well, so when you say when you know where you're going, what does that mean? You understand the structure?
Well,
explain.
Yeah, I got a mile and a half stretch, and you know, I mean, I know every bend and, you know, where every stump is. There's not a lot of wood, but there's enough. And
that's what I told him.
Yeah. So,
there's enough. Anyway.
But there's enough. Yeah. I mean, it's great. You know, you got the right crankbait on. You know, I trolled a lot of slammers this year and make contact with those things. And, you know, 99% of the time they deflect off that just right. You get the bang. And, you know, sometimes that's the trigger because it's just like I said, there's not a lot of cover. There's not a lot of cover. There's not a ton of weed growth. And this is back when the river, the Wisconsin River, had water in it. But, yeah, you know, it's like, okay, I'm working this 8-foot break line and that's, you know, I'm going to work that thing and yeah, upstream, downstream, both.
So timber
is maintain the right speed. Yeah. Maintain the right speed. You know, a lot of times it was like 2.4, 2.5.
Is that 2.4, 2.5 in conjunction with current?
There's barely any current. Okay. It's almost a non-factor. Remember we went down there? I showed you. And I'm like, what's the current speed? And you're like,
I remember that. I spit, I spit in the river, and I went, that's about a tenth of a mile. Like, you watched it. Like,
you didn't believe me. Yeah.
Yeah. I could have blown it faster to the left.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that being said, you know, when you said, I know where I'm going, which means you understand the structure, but you know where the semi-permanent cover is the timber, stumps, yeah, whatever you want to hit. Something to consider if you're going to troll a river that has current is calculating the drift speed and accounting for that with depth, your running depth of your baits, and the action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how do we calculate that? Again, I think I talk about this. I hope I talked about it in the book. You can sort of just stop everything and allow your boat to drift and get a feel for it, right? Your GPS, nose up, nose down, whatever direction you're going. I think the best way to really dial that in, though, is I'm trolling upstream, right? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that my bait's action looks good on a short leash, meaning just 4 or 5 feet of line out so I can see them. And I'm looking at the bait more so than I'm feeling my speed. I want the action. So having an understanding what baits you're running.
Yes, yes. That's a critical thing to do. Right. Take the time when you go out and on a normal situation, most people have current on their river. So I understand that. And sometimes it could be what? I mean, your river cooks.
I've seen 4 or 5.
Sometimes you've seen it. Yep. But a lot of times it might be 2 or 3 miles an hour. That's a lot. Oh, that's quick.
Yeah, 1.92 miles an hour is nothing shocking. Yeah.
Yeah. Throw a slammer fatty minnow out. And like you said, put 4 feet of line out and watch that thing. And I mean, I know how deep that thing's going to go on a normal situation, but if you're fighting the current, it's going to affect it, and you're going to have to, you know, figure out what speed to go at. It might be 1.9 or something like that. You might have to back it way down, you know, get that thing to wiggle just right and not overcook it.
Right, exactly, because you can go like way too fast, like it's just blaring. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. trolling downstream, whole other animal, right?
Sure.
One thing I want to look at, especially in the fall, if I am trolling moving water, and if I have enough current, and this is a Booker trick he taught me years ago, is being smart structurally. Let's say, and I've seen it in river, in the main, you know, like we say main basin, right, Jay?
Sure.
On a river, say the river bed, right? Whatever. Who gives?
We go river channel here.
Whatever. The main, whatever it is, you say, how deep is that river? And everybody goes, it's 27 feet, because that seems to be the consensus or whatever it is. When I hit the edges of holes going either way in a river, what I want to do is be able to stall that boat out where those baits are hanging there for the longest time possible. Now, that becomes a mastery of understanding running depth and understanding the action of those baits and the speed, right? So let's say that I'm trolling upstream. If I can linger on the edge, like if I'm going upstream and my baits hit the edge of a hole, I want to linger there as much as I can, right? And let the current work the bait and then move into the center of the hole and move to the upper edge of the hole. And I want to do that over anything that I find that's interesting. So let's say we have a hump in a river or a hole, or we have a point or something of that nature. Having a mastery of your running depth and your speed will allow you to practically idle that boat in current in some capacity. See what I'm saying, Jay? Like, we've achieved running depth, and we're coming upstream. We hit something interesting. We're going upstream, so these baits are driving down. What kind of speed do I need to maintain to hold those baits in that zone? And I don't mean hold them stagnant, but slow them down and really make them present right there. Mm-hmm. Do I need 10 more feet of line? Do I need, you know, X amount of speed? Do I need to speed it up or slow down? And how do I get them to linger there or bop and dive and rise? Whatever it's going to take to have more action around the structural elements of the river, where I think when people troll a river, if they don't really know the river, they get in the middle and they troll and they go, oh, I'm trolling. right? The same attention should be paid in river trolling that we pay to key elements on lakes and reservoirs. Now, that is going to be more incumbent on us to come up with moves and maneuvers going forward, opposed to when we see a key element on a lake, reservoir, or whatever it might be, we sort of do zigzag passes in and around that, right? How do we keep our baits and maintain that running depth in around those key elements when we're fighting current? That's a whole other freaking dichotomy. You know, it's something you gotta, you know, that's a whole other master class of just awfulness, right? You know, and a lot of that, something I'll say this, I'm sure like two people on planet Earth had just sparked their interest. How do you do that, right? A lot of trial and error and a lot of running the same baits and understanding that rate of flow. Like, okay, so if I find an idle, let's say forget it. Let's go down the rabbit hole. Let's say my river's running 2.2, right, Jay?
Okay.
Okay. And I take a straight 8-inch Joe Bucher depth rater. How deep does it run at 2.2?
How much line out?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So if I sort of have a reference in my head and go, okay, at 2 miles an hour with X amount of feet, I achieve this. And I'm going 3. You see what I'm getting at here? Where if you sort of go, let's say it's running 2.2 and I'm advancing, but I really am trying to target this hump or this hole and I want to linger over this top as long as possible. I need to have a good understanding of line length ratios from rod tip to bait and what I'm targeting.
Yeah. Current consideration. Yeah, right. It's huge and it varies. It's not constant.
It's not constant, but any given
that
day,
hole,
right?
That hole's probably around a bend. So the current's going to pick up at the mm-hmm. entrance of it and yeah, crazy stuff.
But
man,
you can sort of look at it and go, okay, let's say, and I'm making this up. Let's say I got a depth rater and this thing will run 12 feet. I'm probably really off, but I'm not thinking about a depth rater in my head, but I'm thinking about another bait. We'll say depth rater. I was actually thinking about triple D, but whatever. Depth rater. You know, I need 60 feet out to run it down at 12 feet at 2.2, right? Which is probably off, but allow me the latitude, everybody. If I understand that about any given bait, I could theoretically hold my boat in place, which would hold the bait in place at depth.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now we're exploiting trolling versus current. Anything.
Yeah, and that bait's wandering too at the same time.
Yes. So anything I add above and beyond that increases running depth. Right. So we're augmenting the entire time. But if I want to get a bait to just sort of hover on the top of a hump, okay, I can eyeball it and dial it in. Now, again, I'm not trying to talk about the book again, but I talk about segregating in the book my trolling baits from my casting baits for this very reason. I have baits that Jay's seen it. There are Sharpie notes on the top of the baits. You know, this at this at this, right? So the equation is I need this speed and this depth. Therefore, this bait is implemented for that purpose. So yeah. I don't have to think about it. It's like, okay, I grab this bait and I do this with it. And, you know, maybe there's a 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 foot variance. But I've already got this worked out from trial and error. There's not some formula. There's trial and error and you need to be savvy about it. But if you're going to troll a river, you go, okay, here's an inside or out, you know, the outside turn. Inside-outside turns of a river, typically you have a sediment bar on the inside and a deep hole on the outside, right, Jay? The typical. You know, let's say here's this inside turn, but here's a sediment bar that comes out to that hole. And I just want to really present a bait along this break. Once you dial in whatever the presentation is, at your approximate line length within a certain zone or speed range, you can sit there and just snipe them. Hold it steady. I've caught so many muskies literally holding my boat nose into the current, holding it practically steady over humps, right? And the edges of holes. It's deadly. It's just not something that's done very often because most people don't put the time and effort and sort of dial that in. But it has its merits. Anyway, we're down the rabbit hole. Jay, we have ran forever. This is something I talk about forever because you start talking about fall fishing, which fall fishing, it's funny. It's summer fishing and winter fishing because it's right there in the middle. Duh.
So, one way of looking at it.
That's one way of looking at it. It's just so different. I hope this at least gets you guys dialed in some capacity. Like I said, if we're going to reiterate it, be prepared, get fired up, get excited for that shallow water bite. But the way it always happens, it never lasts as long as we want it to, does it, Jay?
No.
Never does. Jay, you've lasted as long as I've wanted you to. Thank you.
It's late.
You're a gentleman and a scholar. Anyway, Jay Bird, say good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. Later.